Welcome to Cowboys, Not Eggheads. Home of the brave, not home of the fearful. The world needs more cowboys and fewer eggheads. We're everywhere podcasts are found. So tell your fellow cowboys, and let's keep the conversation alive on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Remember to subscribe, rate, review, and share. And now, Cowboys, Not Eggheads, with Sam Fisher.
I'm pleased to welcome today my longtime friend of, I don't know, I'm going to say 40 years, but pretty close, Lisa. Yeah. Lisa Mathis, and Lisa's got an incredible story to tell, and so I really appreciate you being on the podcast today, because this is a, you know, it's a story that I think a lot of people probably would view this differently. Some people would want to not talk about it. Some people might want to talk a lot about it. Some people just will talk about it if they're asked, which I think you're probably in the middle category. But the reason I asked Lisa on today is because she was on October 1st, 2017. She was in Las Vegas attending the Route 91 Harvest Festival. Just happened to be the deadliest shooting in United States history. And we're not even going to give the person who did the shooting any credibility whatsoever. So we're not even going to mention that person's name, but it would be a harrowing, incredible experience. So I really appreciate you, being willing to talk about the story of what you experienced, not what I experienced, not what the media experienced, what you, Lisa Mathis, experienced. So first of all, welcome. Thank you. I'm in her lovely home here in Valentine, Nebraska. We're on location in Valentine.
Well, thanks, Sam. I'm excited to be here and talk to you.
Yeah, it'll be good. Obviously, the first thing is, I mean, just tell me your story in your words. Where were you? And, you know, what happened? And how did you get to safety?
So this was the fourth year of the Route 91 Festival, and we had some good friends out in Vegas that had been the previous 3 years and invited Sally and I and Mary out for Valentine to go. So we showed up on Thursday night and then checked into our hotel, which was the Luxor. Right across the street. And we had all of our music festival things. We had our food and our coolers of beer and all of our different hats and boots and things like that. And you just kind of had a schedule of who was playing that day, and you went in and...
It's a day-long festival, right?
I mean, 3 days.
3 days.
3 days.
Okay.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
So did you go all 3 days?
Yep.
You went all 3 days?
Yep.
Like the whole thing, like early morning to late... I mean, that's...
Well, it started, you know, noonish, and you'd head over there about midday and kind of listen to the bands that you wanted to, and then... We wanted to make sure we had a good seat for the evening entertainment, because they had kind of a smaller stage in the back, and then they had the main stage.
Okay. So there were actually seats? You said seats.
Actually, most of it was just grass. You just stood or sat down. There was some on each side of the main stage there. They had like the VIP where there were seats and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
But we just basically stood or sat on the ground.
Those are long days. I mean, going to concert now that we're older. I mean, when we were younger, Lisa and I actually went to the Monsters of Rock concert on July 10th, 1988 in Kansas City, where there were 80,000 people, and it was 110 degrees. And that's when we were kids.
Yep.
And it was a hot, long day. That's all I remember. But now that we're, I don't know, I'm in the Half Century Club. I think you are too.
I am.
Those are long days. I mean, they're just long days. You get tired. I mean, I do. And I love that stuff, as you well know. But it's a different experience now. So I don't even think I would do a 3 day festival, honestly. So this is the day of the shooting was the third.
It was the third day. It was Sunday night. Yep. So we kind of would head over there midday. We'd been maybe at the pool, had breakfast. And you could go back and forth. That's why we wanted to stay at the Luxor.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Was to have rooms there so we could come and go as we wanted to. So this would have been the third night. And it's, you know, getting to be 9:30. And they have the ending or the closing act of the third night, which was Jason Aldean. And they had kind of the main stage that was perpendicular to the strip there. And And then they had a center bar that went down kind of the middle of the venue. So you had people on each side of the bar. Then you had your two VIP sections on each side. So one section was parallel to the strip and the other section would have been parallel to like the airport.
But the other side of the bar area.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So was there, so I'm picturing along like a, I don't know, barricade is the wrong word, but there was a structure that was running right down the middle. Yep.
That was a bar.
And so which were you closest to the strip or were you closest to the airport?
We were closest to the strip.
Okay.
Yep. So we were, I mean, just a 30-second walk, probably minute walk away from the strip.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was kind of the place that we wanted to be. And we always tried to get that area. And in our group, we had 10 people. And Kelly's daughter was there and she had another group of, I don't know, 8 or 10 people. So they would come and go and visit with us. And you might go and see some of the vendors and might go get something to eat. It was just kind of back and forth.
Right.
But you always had somebody in your spot, so they'd save your spot for you.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. So this was getting to be towards the end of the night and Jason Aldean was playing. And third or fourth song in, you know, pretty close to maybe 10 o'clock now. And he's playing Any Old Barstool. And we're all standing up and we're kind of in a line.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Okay. But Any Old Barstool, so I'm not a country music fan, so I wouldn't recognize one Jason Aldean.
Right.
So I barely recognize his name. But is that a song that you, do you know that song because you know that's the song was playing? Or did you know that that was the song when he played it?
I went there because Kelly invited us. I wanted to have a fun girls weekend. So I knew a lot of the country stars.
Yeah.
There were some upcoming people. I knew some of the songs, but the majority, like Big and Rich. I knew Big and Rich because they'd been around for a while.
Right.
Yeah. But a lot of these were newcomers. And so this song, I can't say whether I particularly knew or not.
Okay. And what's the name of the song again? See, I already forgot it.
Any Old Barstool.
Any Old Barstool.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so Sally's on the right of me and we had befriended a couple and we were visiting with them. And we kind of heard a pop, pop, pop.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you again, Lisa. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
How loud, I mean, you and I have been to concerts together, was on a scale of 1 to, so if Monsters of Rock was, it was pretty loud, and I'd say that was like a 9. In comparison, what, how loud was it? Could you hear someone, as the music was going, did you have to yell at them?
You had to yell at them.
Yeah, so it was pretty loud then.
It was very loud.
The music was loud.
It
okay.
was very loud.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And they had screens on each side of the stage so you could see the entertainment in case
sure.
you were sitting a little far back.
Right.
But this, Any Old Barstool was playing and then we heard like this pop, pop, pop. And Sally and I were looking around and it's like, you know, firecrackers. Is there some pyro whatever in the show tonight? We can't see any smoke, don't really smell anything. It's like, well, that was weird. And then so we just kind of got back to enjoying the song and then we heard a pop, pop, pop and we're like, okay, who's being an ass, who's doing firecrackers, what is going
and,
on?
And again, I'm interrupting, I'm sorry, how far away from the stage were you?
Maybe 40 yards.
40 yards.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we were maybe the same distance from the strip.
Okay. So less 40
than half
yards
a football
to an
field.
Exit, 40 yards to the stage.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, gotcha.
Less than a half a football
In
field.
The middle of the section that is the closest to Las Vegas mm-hmm. Boulevard.
Mm-hmm. And there's 22,000 people there amongst all of us.
Okay.
Plus. And so we're trying to figure out what's going on and Sally and I are kind of looking around, you know, who's being the ass, who's doing fireworks. Well, then the shot started and we knew immediately that it was gunfire and everybody hit the ground, dragging people down. I'm laying across Kelly, Sally's laying across me and you can hear the gunfire. And my first initial thought was it was a drive-by on the strip. That made sense. You know, somebody's out there on the strip and mm-hmm. fight or whatever's going on. So it lasted roughly a minute. We were on the ground and heard the gunfire. And then it stopped and you're kind of poking your head up and looking around. And then about 30 or 40 seconds later, it started again. But this time we could hear the bullets buzzing over our head.
In movies, that's depicted, Lisa, as like a whistling sound.
Mm-hmm.
Was it, or was it, could you hear the air or what did that sound like?
I would say you could hear the air. You heard the sound of it, but it was the buzzing or the air of it. You knew not to put your head up because they were that close.
Yeah.
It was different than the first round because you just heard it. This time you could hear the whizzing of it going over your head.
Okay.
Okay. So that lasted, you know, another 30 to 60 seconds. And at that point, we knew that something was going on and it wasn't just on the strip. And so we all got up in our group and started to run. And part of our group headed towards what would have been the back part of the venue.
Was the back part of the venue farther away?
Yes, that would have been where we entered. So we would
okay,
have,
but
we would,
you...
Yep. Okay. Yep. So we were up towards the front and some of our group started to head towards the back. Sally and I ended up running towards the center bar. And I don't know why we did that. We were holding hands. We were keeping our head low. I remember jumping over one person. I don't know their status just because you're running and you're trying to get out of the way. The third round of fire started and we dove underneath the bar area. So they had
a little bit more cover at that point.
Cover. So they had those big railroad cars that they brought in, those containers, because that's where they kept their alcohol. And then they could go back there and get their alcohol. And then they had tables set up kind of all the way around that. And so we dove underneath those tables as the third round of gunfire was going off.
Did you think that you were safer under those tables? Or did you think we're one level higher of safety right now?
I don't remember thinking anything. I think it was just a gut reaction
right.
that we were running, more gunfire, hide.
Right.
And that was our closest hiding was the bar area.
But up until that point, though, you were an open area.
Open area.
Yeah.
Yep. And so then once we got underneath the tables, there's, of course, some bar people that were working there and some other people, and we're army crawling on the ground. And we're starting to run into different people there. And at the first thought, you think that people, there's blood. You know, we're asking them if they're okay. Well, it's like the Bloody Mary juice or the different things from the bar. And so you're, you know, crawling on the ground, you're trying to get as far away from the gunfire as you can. And then it stopped again, and then we're trying to reassess. And then the gunfire started again, so this would have been the fourth round. And then we could hear it tinging off all the metal structures of the bar area. So we knew at this point, we are thinking that they're coming from the strip and they're coming in towards us. That's uh-huh. And there's multiple people. That's the only thing that we can figure out at this point with not seeing anything.
And are you, so you're with Sally.
Yep.
And Sal, it's a stupid question, but I want to ask it. Are you saying like, holy, you're really not like saying, holy shit. You're not saying we're going to die. You're trying to survive, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so what were you saying? Like, let's run for the bar, or let's run here, or let's run there, or did you even say anything?
There wasn't really any words other than talking to the people to make sure they were okay. Sally and I always had eye contact to make sure that we were okay.
Powerful stuff.
Powerful. And then after that fourth round, when you could hear him tinging off the bar, I looked at Sally's face and she's like, I have to get out of here. And so we continued to army crawl and get as far towards the back of the bar area, which would have been towards the back of the venue, just kept going away. We couldn't just sit there. We were not willing to sit there.
Right.
We had to keep moving.
You wanted to move.
Yeah.
Out of the fire zone.
And, at that time, there was a worker there that had a green shirt on. And it was a venue worker. And she had an earpiece on. And we could hear through the earpiece that they knew the shooter was in the Mandalay Bay. They knew it was coming from the Mandalay Bay. So at this time, it's less than 5 minutes in. So I don't know if that...
Is she yelling this out or you just overheard
her? We overheard because we were that close to her because she was waving
us. So you heard her. You literally heard her earpiece was hanging out. Okay.
Because they were telling... The venue people were telling the workers what was going on. She was motioning us to come towards her and to get out.
And or you get... You're on the... But you're on the ground crawling.
We're on the ground, yeah.
Crawling. Now, how long a distant... I mean, obviously, at some point you stand up. So how long do you think you were crawling on the ground?
Oh, it was maybe 10 yards or
20.
It wasn't very much.
It's not 300 yards or something.
No, it wasn't very much.
Gotcha.
So then at this time, we're sitting at the back of the bar and there was another round. This is probably the fifth round. And by this time, we know that there's fire and then a break. Fire and then a break. And so we know that when this round, we're going to get up and run. And so the fifth round stopped and Sally got up and took off. And I remember there was this gal next to me and I was trying to get her to get up and run and she couldn't move. So when I got up, another round started. So I had to stay back. So I sat back there with her and I knew Sally got out because I saw her run ahead of me. So I knew she was ahead of me. So when that sixth round was done, I grabbed the girl and we headed out and ran as fast as we could. And there's just black tar pavement or whatever. And we get out of the gate and I remember looking down and there was a girl huddled outside of the gate in between bushes. And I got her up and told her to get going. And I saw...
paralyzed in fear.
Yeah. She couldn't move.
Couldn't make a decision for herself. I mean, like someone had to tell. And I'm not in any way respecting this lady at all. Because people react differently. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any idea how I would react. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I mean, I'd like to think I'd know. But I don't know. I haven't been there. But you had to like tell her, you have got to move.
You have to move. Get out of here.
And she responded.
Yeah. And she got up and ran. And I remember looking down and there was one bloody footprint there. And so at this point, you know.
On this black asphalt.
It's on the cement now because we're outside of the paved area. So it's on the sidewalk. And so now you know what you're dealing with at some point that you know.
This is not a drill.
And so then I have my cell phone. I'm trying to text. I'm trying to call. Of course, I'm older. I don't have my readers on. And so I'm having trouble. I'm like, why don't I have my good contacts in? Why didn't I wear my good ones so I could read? So I start walking towards the strip and I stopped and I looked up and I'm at the Excalibur. And so, because the Excalibur is right next to the Luxor, and I look up and down the strip, there's nobody. There's absolutely
no cars, no nothing.
So this is...
it's like a ghost town.
It's like... so this is probably 12 minutes after the start.
It's like going down the strip during the pandemic. Nothing was there.
Yeah. And I'm like, where's everybody at? A gentleman's running. There's another gal. May have been the same gal. I don't know. She's sitting on the curb of the Excalibur. I started to go towards her. The gentleman that was running grabbed her and headed down the strip. And then we had like this little walkway that we came from the Luxor over to the venue. And I found that little walkway. And so then we were kind of going through the little gate area.
Now, at this point, were the no shots were being fired at this point?
When I got out of the venue, there was another round or two, but it was in such a far distance that I knew that I was okay.
You were getting away from the sounds of bullets.
Yes. It wasn't as loud and there was nobody around. And so... if I had realized, okay, Mandalay Bay, that's it.
I'm sorry to interrupt you again. So you exited on the north side, not the south side, the north side.
I'm on the strip.
You're on the strip.
Yeah.
I'm picturing something parallel to the strip. And on the north side would be towards, or the south side would be towards the Mandalay Bay. You're away from the Mandalay Bay. You're going away. You're not going towards it. You're going away from it, which would be you're going north.
Right. So when I'm walking out,
Excalibur is north of the Mandalay Bay.
I'm on the strip.
Yeah, okay.
The Mandalay Bay is to my left.
Yeah.
The Luxor is in front of me. The Excalibur is in front of me. Okay. Yep. So then I get back. There's a couple of people behind me that... was going back to Luxor, visiting, making sure everybody was okay. I'm still on my cell phone trying to call. And at this time, the cell service is not working at all because how many people are trying to call and text?
Yeah.
And so then I get back in the hotel. I get into an elevator and I believe there was two men in there and I'm paralyzed because I'm with two men. I don't know who they are. And I had just been through the shooting. They had absolutely no idea what just happened.
Of course not.
They were in the Luxor and I have bar stuff all over me. I have asphalt and scrape and probably blood on my knees. And I'm sure looking like I just got done with the gunfight.
Yeah.
And
you had.
And so I think they're wanting to get out of the elevator as quickly as I am because they're thinking I'm a crazed woman. You know, it was just, I didn't want to be in that elevator with them. I wanted to be out of there. So go up to my room. For some reason, I was the one in our room that had the room key. They probably gave us two or three, but I had a room key. I opened my door, just assuming that all my friends were going to be there, that everybody would be there.
And nobody's there.
There's nobody. I don't see anybody.
What did you think at that point? How did you feel at that point?
I haven't talked to anybody. I'm scared shitless. I know Sally got out. I don't know where anybody else is at. I lock the door. I look out the window, which would be, I believe, towards the T-Mobile.
That's towards the west.
Okay. And, I mean, it's black. There is nobody. All you see is lights coming, cop cars, ambulances. Yeah. But there's no traffic. There's no people. I go into the other room because we had adjoining rooms. And I turn that TV on to one channel. I go into our room. I turn that TV on to another channel. And then I'm listening to the different stories. And of course, it's on the news right away.
Sure.
So in my estimation, what I can recall, I think I was probably in the venue probably 12 minutes through six-ish rounds. And so this is maybe 20 minutes now that I'm back in my room. And what do I do?
Did you have an adrenaline dump? Do you know what an adrenaline dump? I've only had one my entire life.
Tell me what it is, and I'll tell you if I had it.
Well, everything became very slow. Mm. I could not process anything. I was like very numbed or slow. It actually had to do when I was a police officer.
Yeah.
Everything just like war. I mean, it was a dump.
I would say no.
No,
I had things I needed to do. I text my girls.
That's Lisa, I know.
I'm like, okay, I got to get my shit together. The news was saying that there was multiple shooters possibly, that there was possibly a van with explosives in the Mandalay Bay. And I'm like,
What do I do?
So I kept looking out my peek hole. There was nobody in the hallway. I'm like, where am I going to hide if they come in? Because you don't know what's going on at this point. You don't know.
Right. You don't know if terrorists or
you don't know
anything.
Right. So I text my girls and I said, call me ASAP. I called my husband, Todd. So it's 10 o'clock, 10:30 in Vegas.
Did Todd know what was going on?
It's midnight here.
Oh, he didn't know.
So he's asleep.
Hey, I'm fine.
He's... So I call him and I tell him to turn on the news.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know what's going on. There was a shooting at the venue. I'm back. And I told him as quickly as what I said, I got to get off the phone because I got a call. I got to try to get a hold of Sally. I got to try to get, you know. So we have Kelly and, you know, eight other people. And Kelly got through. And I don't remember if it was texting or calling. I believe it was a phone call. They were all in the Tropicana. So
across the street. Or no, it's on the same side of the street as the you are across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so they were the Tropicana.
Okay.
Jeff, the one guy that was with us, had been shot in the arm, shrapnel or shot, and so they had taken him to the hospital. So the seven other gals were at the Tropicana. I was at the Luxor, and I told them, I said, I know Sally got out. I just don't know where she's at. Her phone had died, and this is kind of our, I don't know, silver lining, how we can all joke about it. They were trying to sell us $60 phone chargers in the Luxor, and nobody wanted to pay $60 for a phone charger.
You would have paid $200 for
and
a
we would have, Sally charger. Wished she would have had that phone charger then, because she didn't have a phone.
Yeah.
Nothing worked. And at this point, earlier in the day, Mary had to get back to Nebraska because she had to do something with her daughter. So Mary had flown out, and Allison, a friend in Vegas, had gotten her ticket. So Mary's in Nebraska, and she's just traveled, you know, fly, drive, get to Kearney. She turns on the news, and she sees what's going on. So she's trying to get a hold of us. So right. Mary gets through. I tell her, you know, everything's okay. I don't know where Sally's at, but she got out. I just talked to Kelly. Everybody's okay, but we don't know what's going on with a bomb, a car bomb, or multiple shooters or whatever. Phone calls kept dropping, so you had to kind of keep calling back and stuff like that.
Reminds me of September 11th, I worked for the Republican National Committee, so I was trying to call all my colleagues in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't get a hold of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
So I talked to Todd, okay. I told him to call T to let T know, Sally's husband. My daughter Skylar actually heard the ding on my text and she called me. And if you know my daughter Skylar, she's very intelligent. So she starts looking up stuff and somehow she comes across some radio frequency from people that were working in the Luxor or the Mandalay Bay and conversing about what was going on. And she sent me just like a little tidbit
sound
of
bite.
It. Yeah. Sound bite. And I'm like, how did you? I don't know where she got it from.
She's like,
so the one smart thing that she did tell me to do, she goes, make sure that you go on Facebook and mark yourself safe. I never thought about it. And I'm like, thank you. So I did.
Yeah, yeah.
So when people woke up, they knew
you're okay.
That we were okay.
Smart, yeah.
And then Kelly called back and her husband, Mark, works for the MGM and the fire division. And he's on his way. So he's going to be able to come down. And she said, hold, when Mark gets there, he'll call you. And so I stared at that phone until Mark called me because that was my connection to
everybody else,
to the world, to what was going on. Cause I'm by myself.
Yeah.
Mark got there. He called. He said, I'm in the building. I said, thank you. He said, don't open the door until I come up with everybody else. So in this time frame, I'm like, I'm getting the hell out of here. So I'm packing everybody's stuff. I got my stuff packed. I get Kelly and Sally stuff packed.
Because your mind frame was, we don't know if this is over or not.
Right. I'm like, I have a flight in the morning. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And now the other gals from Vegas, their stuff was in the other room and I don't know whose is whose. So I have all of my stuff and Sally and Kelly's. I'm putting my stuff, my bags are packed and they're at the door. It's probably 4 a.m. now, 6 o'clock back home. People are starting to wake up. People are knowing that we were there, getting lots of cells,
so here texts. Here comes the traffic.
Yep. I'm okay. Talked to a few people, but most are just texts.
I think I text you. I bet you go, if I'm texting you, everybody was texting you. Well, I never text you.
And I have all my texts and stuff, so I have them all.
I'm going to keep talking. I'm going to see if I texted you. So it was probably the last text I ever sent you. No,
so it was 6 hours of just trying to figure out what to do next, get your stuff packed. How do I get out of here? My friends are okay, but when are they going to get back? So it's 4 a.m. and there's a knock on the door and I look through the peephole and there's Mark with all of our girls.
4 o'clock.
And let me tell you, it was a grand reunion to see everybody. Hugs and...
just a release.
A relief.
A release of relief.
And we knew everybody was okay. But just a relief that you could actually physically hug somebody and you weren't by yourself anymore. And then during that time too, Sally, she doesn't have a phone. I know her daughter's going to be worried about her because her daughter and son-in-law live in Vegas. So I don't have her number. So I messaged her through Facebook just to let her know that Sally got out. I don't know where she's at, but she got out, that she's okay.
Yeah.
And so Sally kind of had her own experience. She was in a different hotel in a stairwell, ran into a couple. They helped her get an Uber or Lyft and got her to her daughter's house. So, you know, by 4 a.m, we know everybody's okay and things. So
just truly unbelievable. I mean, how long was it after that before you got a solid night's sleep where you didn't wake up?
I don't know if I can answer that. I'm not a very good sleeper to begin with. I'm a light sleeper, but I got home.
Well, I guess the question is, that's just not something you can just like go, but I mean, that was a trauma that you went through. And so how did you react? I mean, to me, sleep is the first place where you're going to see. Like, if I can't sleep, something is up.
Yeah. I think actually the thing that I couldn't deal with the most was I can remember every second or every minute. I can remember the people and the
faces. She wrote down. You wrote down.
I have.
She has a piece of paper here, and I'd like to take a picture of that if you don't mind.
Yeah, a timeline.
And put it on social media.
Yeah.
That's how you process things.
Mm-hmm.
When did you first come up with this?
So when I got home, I sat down and I kind of went through my texts, and then they had information on the news channels, obviously. And if you remember back then, they had switched the start of the first shots a couple times.
Yes.
They did. And I don't know why they did that, because
it's just
there's 22,000 people there. Right. Everybody has the information.
Right.
But they switched the time, like, from 10:59 to... or 9:59 to 10:06. There was a...
Oh, that's a pretty big discrepancy.
There was a huge discrepancy. So I got all my information down. And then when the documentary came out, it was either last year.
And what is that on? I haven't seen it. Is it on Netflix, or what is it on? Do you know? Do you know the name of the documentary? I'm going to look it up now, obviously.
I will. I was out in Vegas for the 5 year, and I believe Kelly had told me about it then. And I watched it shortly after that. So I went through it and I compared it to my timeline, and the documentary was pretty close
pretty
to what
close.
I had.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. But the one, I don't remember not being able to sleep or that bothering me. The one thing that probably bothered me the most was I could remember every person's, what they were wearing, if they were black or white, male or female. When I had jumped over somebody, or like the gal that was at the back of the bar that we got out, or the gal that was sitting there by the bushes, there was one time.
Now, when you say, just for clarification, when you say jump over somebody, you're talking about somebody who was deceased or injured?
One or the other. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know, because they were lying on the ground and I had to jump over.
But your brain took this picture of them.
Yeah. And
you down to the point of where you knew what they were wearing.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's fascinating.
The one thing I can't remember was when I was telling you in that third or fourth round of shooting, when they were dinging and I had looked out towards the venue and the table was there. There was a gentleman in a white shirt and I couldn't remember him. I couldn't remember anything more about him. And I went and talked to a therapist one time, and he took me through the whole day. And we came to the conclusion that the reason I couldn't remember that one specific person, his hair color, anything other than the white shirt or table, is because I thought that they were coming in after us, and I thought we were dead. And that was the one moment.
Put that out of your head.
Put that out of my head. Everything else I can remember, but once I talked to the therapist, counselor, had one session with him, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm good now.
And, I mean, if you don't... was this, when you talked to the therapist, was it months and months after, or pretty much right after?
It was a couple weeks to a month.
Good for you.
He was coming from Kearney, and he was seeing some people here, and I got a hold of him right away, and he came in and did a session with me, because it drove me nuts that there was this one thing I couldn't remember.
I bet the therapist was pretty, what's the right, I don't have words to describe it, but it's a poor way of saying this, but it was probably impressed with your wherewithal, or your stamina, or your... of how you process this whole event, I would imagine.
I mean, yeah, because I could
pretty
remember.
Strong.
Yeah, I could remember everything, and I still can. I mean, I don't remember that part, but that's, I think, was, like I said, it's because we thought we were done.
So the million-dollar question is, how did this event change you, if at all?
I had a hard time going to church after that, because you enter from the back of the church. And everything's up front, and I didn't like my back being towards the door.
When you go into a restaurant today...
My back's on the wall.
Yeah.
I know where my... Well, and Sam, I saw you a week after. I came to Lincoln.
Yes.
For
parents'
weekend.
You were on the wall, my friend.
And we went to my daughter's sorority, and then we walked down and met you downtown.
Lots of people.
Lots of people, football game. I was watching backpacks. I was looking at people's faces. Came in and I met you, and Sam doesn't normally give hugs, but you gave me a hug.
Yes.
And my back was always to the wall, and I know where my exits are at.
Yeah. And no one told you to do that. That's just something you did.
Yeah.
And I never did that, Lisa, until I was a cop. And no one ever said, as a cop, you have to sit here, or you have to do this or that. It's just something you just, it's something I developed. Mm-hmm. And so I do it. And I'm the same way.
I think the other thing that helped us was, so this was October 1st, and in March over spring break, T and Sally, Todd and I, and my daughter Macy came back to Vegas. And BJ and Kelly, Kelly was with us, and they picked us up at the airport, and we went to the venue because Sally and I wanted to figure out how we got out of there. because we're running and our heads down and it's dark. And
so that was important for you to reconcile that.
Mm-hmm. And so at this point, and you, everybody probably saw this on the news, they had those curtains or whatever all the way around the venue so you couldn't see in. I mean, it's a crime scene. And there was a security guard there. So we grabbed a beer. We're going to make this as enjoyable or whatever as we can. We're going to relax. We're going to remember what happened to us. We're going to try to figure stuff out. Grabbed a beer and started walking around the outside of the venue.
You're a brave soul. There are people out there, and I'm sure you would agree that there are people out there that will never, ever be able to go back there. Because people process things differently.
Differently,
and there's not a good way or a bad way to do it. But you, I think, are a lot like me in the sense that's the way I would process it. I'd have to go back, and if there are questions that I had, you just want to go answer those. And so you're processing those. That's how you process is that you wanted to have a solid picture in your mind. If there are any gaps, you wanted to fill those gaps.
Yep.
A lot of people just wouldn't want to just flush it away.
Yep.
And I think that's where they get in trouble.
Right.
You can't flush it away.
You have to face it head on.
Yeah.
So the security guard was there and he asked us if we needed something and said, no, we're first turn back. We're just trying to figure out. Okay, no problem.
Come on in.
So Sally figured out where she'd gotten out back towards the airport because the airport fence had actually been torn down from the
people right on the runway. They stopped air traffic because
there'd been a breach.
On the tarmac.
So then I figured out I had come out just kind of on a little street that would be perpendicular to the boulevard there. So we got that figured out, and I went back for the 5-year. My daughter Skylar went there for the 5-year anniversary. They have a run walk every year. They have a healing garden that has all of the 58 victims there. Family members, anybody can bring in stuff. And that was nice to go through.
Yeah.
And so we as a group get back together. And that was the first night or weekend that I had met most of those people. And we have been forever friends since then, because I mean, something like that bonds you.
Yes.
We send Christmas cards. They've all come out to Nebraska and went down the river,
out
to the lake and 4th of July or whatever. We've been back there for Thanksgiving and stuff. So
That is cool. Dumb question, but are there any specific moments from that day that just we just talked about it. You've processed anything, but is there anything specific that just you can't share? What am I trying to say? That it just flat out stayed with you. That are so like, I mean, you describe jumping over victims and their clothing. I mean, that's amazing. Is there anything like that or specific that you just, you know?
This sounds, it's not a stupid question, and this sounds like a stupid answer, but when I got out of the venue, I have my cell phone and I have my koozie with me. I don't know how I hung on to them. My koozie had a beer in it when the shooting started, but somehow I got rid of my beer and kept my $20 koozie because by God,
probably because of a stress ball, dude. You're probably squeezing it.
And I had my cell phone, and how I did all of that and ran
you were two-fisted running.
So that was, I don't know. I guess when you're in the midst of that, you still have some of your faculties about.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lose that $20 koozie
and the $40 beer, but you lost the $40 beer.
Yeah.
This is the most obvious question of this entire podcast, and that is, you know, how has this affected your outlook on life?
Some people, we have a group, it's called the Route 91 Family, and you had to have been there or know somebody that was there to be in the group. It's a online texting on Facebook. And some people have felt the need to do something fantastic or extraordinary with their life because they've been given a second chance. I don't know as if I feel that. I feel very fortunate. I don't know that it's changed other than being aware of things around me now and maybe more understanding or sympathetic when somebody goes through something. Like Sherry that was in our group, she was stuck in the storage container in that bar area. And the bullets were...
I bet her memories are all auditory. She remembers what she heard.
She moved out of Vegas for a while, and she's back now, but she had to get out of there because the people that live there...
Well, that's your senses where you could see...
Yeah.
even the smell. I bet you could smell stuff. Hers would be if she was in a box car, like
that container. She goes,
ding, ding, ding. Yeah. But that's all she can think. That's her memory that day.
Mm-hmm. And I hear here's something that just came to mind. Like when I go for a walk around the park, they have the gun range down there.
Yeah,
I know it's there. I know there's going to be somebody. And when they're shooting, it doesn't bother me. A couple years ago, when I was in Chicago with my daughter and a car backfired, I hit the ditch because I thought it was gunfire. Yes. Yes. So that, I guess, is probably how it's changed me. Yeah. When I'm not expecting something, I expect the worst when it happens. And
sure.
Not, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess you talked about some positive changes. I mean, it's a stupid question, but, you know, there are, you know, there's always good in something. There's always good in something. You know, when people, and there's, you know, something, there's a lot of good things that happened that day. A lot of people helping strangers and so forth. Have there been any other positive change? I mean, obviously you get together with this group and you're very close with the folks you're with there that day. Any other positive changes that maybe came out of that day?
I think even though I'd been back to Vegas probably once a year, I hadn't been to the Healing Garden. I hadn't done the run walk with the other fellow survivors. And that was something that was awesome for me to see, was to go around, because I mean, there's a paper here that has the 58 victims, and I know their names and know their stories from reading about it, but to actually see that in the Healing Gardens, I thought that was something that was very moving to me.
Yes.
And I think Vegas has done a nice job. I signed up, as most victims did, with the Nevada Department of Victims of Crimes or whatever, and they send emails every now and then and about how the lawsuit's going and where would you like the memorial ad and what's your opinion about this. So they're getting a lot done, and a lot of those people need that group and that type of information to kind of get through this. I think I feel that with my group of friends that I was with, we've helped each other get through it, and we've all met it head on. I mean, you can't let it ruin your life, and so you're going to meet it head on, and I'm not going to stop. Just like the weekend after, I'm not going to not go to my daughter's parents' weekend. I have to get up and put my big girl panties on and go live life.
Yeah.
You know, you have to.
Sure did. Yeah. I saw you. Yeah. I mean, that's true. Do you have survivor's guilt?
No.
Good for you.
I'm a Christian. I'm a believer. It wasn't my time. The one thing that got me the worst when I was going through the victims and I was reading it, I'm going to choke up when I do this. There was a Lisa Romero Munoz, and obviously same first name, same last name, initials, because mine's Rogers Mathis. Mm-hmm. She was 48. I was same 48. Age. She worked at a school.
And like you worked at school.
And when that got me and that choked me up, I don't, it's
just got,
not,
it's just got goosebumps. It's,
and I always have her,
bless her,
picture. And then when we ran our races, I got her name and I got to pin her name.
How cool.
When I ran the race. So that was cool.
Wow.
So I always think of her, not survivor's guilt, but just acknowledging.
Yeah. Could have been anybody.
Could have been anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a person that's always had faith. I've known you since we were kids. Did your faith grow stronger?
I would say that I didn't question my faith. Like I said, things happen. There's bad people out there. I think by the reaction of the community and the people on how well they came together to help everybody out made your faith grow stronger.
Yeah.
One part of that, when I came back, and it doesn't have anything to do with faith, but my brother asked me, he goes, I hope I can ask you this question. He goes, do you have any negativity toward the Second Amendment now?
That's what my AI would want to ask you.
And I said, nope, still believe in it. There was a lot of people, because I believe Nevada is a It's open carry. And there was a lot of people that helped that day because they were open carry. And you've heard all the kinds of stories about it. So I said, no.
Good guys carry guns too, you know.
One lunatic or whoever is not going to ruin it for the rest of us that are law-abiding. So I said,
This is it's a difficult question for me to ask. I in the last several years have tried to make a habit of praying for my enemies.
Oh yeah.
Are you able to pray for the shooter? Are you able to forgive the shooter?
Yes. And I just did my with Lent a couple weeks ago, was one of the readings about you have to pray and love your enemies. And I visited with my cousin Julie about that. And we had a conversation and I said, yes, you have to love and pray and forgive them. And it's up to God and them if they forgive themselves. So I don't have a problem with that. Evil people.
But your cousin Julie had already had a little struggle with that, huh?
Because we were talking about a different situation.
Sure.
And, you know, in this situation...
This is a pretty... I mean, that's a... That's... For you to be able to forgive the person that caused all that chaos, or to consider it, or to pray for them, it's huge. I mean, that's not very many people would be able to, and I wouldn't expect them to, frankly. But it's a tough question that we have to answer these questions with sometimes.
And maybe it's a different situation because, you know, we all know the shooter dead within a few hours. I didn't lose anybody close. And those families that did.
They might think a little differently, huh?
They have their own, you know, hell they have to live through. So that
you're right.
It's to everybody's, you know, I guess my faith, I just try to rely on that I'm not in control and I have to give it up to God.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
It just reminds me why I'm friends with you. last question for you, Lise. What advice would you give others who have survived a trauma?
And how I reacted to this by no means is how I'm telling everybody how they should react because everybody's different. I'm a Midwest girl. I'm just used to buck up and you got to deal with stuff and you got to meet it head on. Nobody likes conflict. Nobody likes negativity. And I guess I'm going to go deal with the conflict, the negativity or get over whatever because I'm not going to let it eat my life, ruin my life. Because I've been in situations before where I've let things gnaw at me and get to me and it's no good. You have to let it go. You have to forgive. You have to move on. And you can let something like this trauma control your life or you can deal with it and live the rest of your life.
Right.
So I've chosen to acknowledge. I don't mind talking about it. Maybe something I say will help somebody.
I think so.
Our friends and I get together as a positive memory memorial time of our new friendship. It's not because of the death of the 58 people. We acknowledge that and pray for their families and things like that. But we try to do the positive of getting together. Now I've met the gals that were there, I've met their children and their husbands and their grandchildren and been to dinner with them and pool parties with them and stuff. So now I have more people that I'm friends with. So we try to think of the positive things, I guess.
Yeah. Thanks,
Sam.